page 2, I believe, beginning on lines 22. I also noted another minor change on page 88, that's section 215 of the bill. An additional $5,000 is added to the revolving fund, and the bill also adds two categories of claims which may draw upon the fund. So this fund is replenished each time there's a withdrawal made from it. That's page 88, lines 1 through 17.
Do we have anything at all in terms of proposed Senate amendments?
I don't believe there are any amendments to the bill. There is in the bill the appropriation for the governor's task force, but Ms. Streisinger can correct me if I'm wrong. That's already been approved by Ways and Means Committee.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Kramer, that's correct, and I should point out that this bill did go through Ways and Means on the House side, where that revolving fund issue was discussed, and also the fact that the appropriations have been handled elsewhere.
All right.
I'd move it.
All right. Senator Cohen moves House Bill 2333 to the floor. Do pass. Any discussion? Senator Hamby.
Help me understand, or perhaps counsel can, on page 88, the settlement of legal claims against the department in cases where immediate payment is necessary or advisable.
What page is that, Senator? What page are you
page
on?
Page 88, lines 13 and 14.
Mr. Franke may also seek to add to this, but I called the division and asked them about that, and these are for relatively minor claims, and there would be a payout to avert subsequent litigation and all the resources that would be required by taking something to court. So if, upon the advice of counsel for corrections from the Attorney General's office, if they say we can deal with this through this type of settlement, then these funds could be used for that type of claim. Mr. Franke can add to that if I've been incorrect.
No, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a fair characterization. There's some cases where there's a small amount of money claimed, and a settlement can be obtained if a check can be drawn quickly.
And so, am I to understand that the $15,000 found in line 2 will cover all the categories?
No, ma'am. Mr. Chairman, Senator Hamby, the money will be replenished using a normal routing for those kinds of funds.
Okay.
Any further discussion on Senator Cohen's motion?
Call the roll, please.
Brennan?
Aye.
Rothman?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Bill?
Aye.
Wyatt?
Aye. Carries. All right, now we'll go to House Bill 2186.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there'd be three sets of amendments to discuss with respect to this bill, and I'd ask the members if they could place in front of them, so I could assist them in reviewing it, both the House bill, the House amendments to the bill, and then the House amendments to the bill should read hand engrossed. There are amendments to that. And then there'll be two other pages you'll need to review. One's labeled Council's proposed amendment to House Bill 2186, dated April 29th, 1987. And the other is amendments proposed by It's by the Children's Services Division dated May 12th, 1987. Basically, to provide the committee with an overview, the attempt in this bill, as amended by the House, is to delineate who pays the cost of serving and paying for witnesses in criminal proceedings and under the House amendments in civil commitment and in juvenile proceedings. And it designates that in certain situations, the responsibilities are the responsibility of the county, of the state, of the Indigent Defense Board, or of the individual. The amendments, if I could go through them one by one, beginning with Council's proposed amendment to House Bill 2186. This amendment has the support of the State Court Administrator, and it would reinsert the deleted material on lines 13 to 15 of page 1 of the original bill. The intent of this amendment is to leave unaffected the current ability of the defendant to obtain 10 subpoenas from the court. This has nothing to do with the cost of service or the cost of paying for the witness to come to court. It's just the ability of the defendant to go to the clerk and get the subpoenas to serve them. If the committee did not take action on this amendment, it would leave open the possibility of the defendant having to go to the judge each and every time the defendant wanted to have a subpoena issued. So that's the First Amendment. The next set of amendments are reflected as hand-engrossed, and those are on the House amendments to House Bill 2186. And they clarify in the juvenile proceeding and civil commitment proceeding that it's going to be the party who requests the witness or requests the summons to issue that's going to be responsible for the costs, except in the case of an indigent defendant or an indigent person. So those are provided by the hand-engrossed amendments. Finally, we've got the CSD amendments dated May 12th, 1987. And what these amendments clarify, in particular, on page 2, line 38 of the House amendments, is that it's going to be the responsibility of the county to pay for the cost of witnesses subpoenaed to appear on behalf of the Children's Services Division. Now, Kingsley Click from the Court Administrator's Office is here to answer questions as to the Judicial Department's position. In your files, you should have a letter from her dated May 27. It's not precisely clear who pays for those costs now, but it is clear the state doesn't want to pay for them in the future. It seems that those costs under existing practice is paid by the local juvenile department or by the county, but not by the state. These, again, are only for witnesses on behalf of the Children's Services Division. That's where we are.
What is the very first amendment that you discussed is identified by what?
It's identified as Council's proposed amendment to House Bill 2186, dated April 29, 1987.
It's in the back. It's in the back. It's in the back of the it's on the last page of Mark's memo.
Oh, I see. All right. What's the committee's pleasure on this bill and these particulars?
Yes.
let's start with that.
Starters.
Yes.
Senator Cohen moves council's proposed amendments dated 4/29/87. Any objection? All right. That's so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I need to have a further refresher on the CSD.
Council?
Is that, Mark, is that the CSD amendment, is that a major change from what they're doing now or who's paying now?
As best I could understand it, it is not a major change.
Okay.
Now, Paul Snyder's here from the Association of Oregon
Counties.
He's not
waving his hands right now, I guess. So I guess, for whatever reason. Then I'd move both, I'd move the Hannah Gross 4/29/87 and 5/12/87 CSD amendments. There are not real conflicts, right, Mark, when they can fit together appropriately?
They do.
All right, Senator Cohen has moved the Hannah Gross amendments shown under date, offered by the State Court Administrator under date of April 29th, and the CSD amendments of 5/12/87.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Hamby.
They're in sync. They're not in conflict.
Correct.
Hopefully, but they're, yeah. I was going to say they're both in the same lines and the, yes.
Right, checked.
No problem, Mr. Chair.
Anyone want further time? Any discussion? Any objection? That's so ordered then. Senator Cohen moves House Bill 2186 as so amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Wyatt?
Aye.
Fry?
Aye. That carries. We'll take House Bill. We'll take Senate Bill 909.
Mr. Chairman, that's a bill that we heard somewhat earlier in the session. It deals with the statute setting penalties for frivolous appeals. In 1983, the Supreme Court issued an opinion called Broyles v. Brown, which overruled some earlier cases and said we're going to take the statute literally. What it provides is that a penalty equal to 10% of the judgment at issue will be given unless it appears evident to the appellate court that there was probable cause for taking the appeal. There is a two-page memo in your file. It's a review of 909 and the proposed amendments, and then a one-page memo that has the actual amendments on them, along with a hand-engrossed copy of the first page of the bill. The original bill, Senate Bill 909, essentially would have undone Broyles versus Brown. The statutory language is fairly objective. That is, if there's probable cause, the court said in Broyles, we're going to decide that in terms of the reasonable lawyer. The old standard was whether an appeal had been taken in bad faith or was taken for harassment or for delay or some other untoward purpose. The original bar bill would have gone back to that subjective standard where the court had to look at the intent of the person filing the appeal. We got some comments in a very effectively written letter, which you also have copies of, from Toby Graff and Mildred Carmack and Jim Westwood up in Portland, all of whom specialize in appeals, outlining the problems with 909 and suggesting some ways to fix it. We distributed that letter. Mike Reynolds in the Department of Justice agrees that their suggestions are good ones. Justice Gillette has reviewed the letter. I haven't seen it, but I understand that he says that what they suggest is better than what's in the bill. if you're interested, well, the purpose of the bill as the amendments are is simply to put into statute what the Supreme Court decided in Broyles v. Brown. And what they said was they're going to look at probable cause from the point of view of a reasonable lawyer, if there is such a thing. That what they will look at, pardon?
Smart or dumb.
Smart or dumb, right. That what they'll look at is not whether you would decide that, yes, the judgment would have been overturned, but simply whether people could hold an honest discussion about it, whether the issues are open to debate. And then the fourth thing is that the phrase evident to the appellate court means that there's no specific burden of proof. The advantage to this is that the court can simply look at the briefs and listen to the oral argument and decide the issue. Under Senate Bill 909, the court would have had to have a fact-finding hearing to determine bad faith. And appellate courts are singularly ill-equipped to do fact-finding. They review documents, they listen to oral argument, and they make a decision on that basis, and they are simply not set up to do fact-finding hearings. So the bill essentially, as the amendments are proposed, clarifies the statute and adopts the Supreme Court's standard for deciding a frivolous appeal in Broyles versus Brown.
Counsel, did you say that you had not seen Judge Gillette's letter?
That's correct.
Well, I'm going to have to apologize. Judge Gillette wrote me a letter, which I
didn't even know who it was to.
Yeah,
well,
it was to me, those of you who have been in my office understand it's easy for something to get lost on the top of my desk. Apparently, that's what happened. He sent this letter, and before I could get it up to the office to get it copied for everybody, it got buried under something, and I really do feel bad about that, because I think committee members should have that. I guess I just assumed that it had been done. And because Judge Gillette did what he did was to comment upon the letter from the attorneys in Portland, pointing out, you know, what was good about their ideas and what wasn't so good. And it's kind of a complicated subject. I would suggest that you people be provided with his letter before we act on this, but I'll do whatever you want on it. We could put it on for Tuesday. And by that time, you'd have the letter.
It's a Senate bill. I'll trust you. I mean, we can.
I don't know what to say. I don't even know what to say.
What would we do if we saw? If we had Judge Gillette's letter here today, would it recommend that we support the council's amendments, or would it be recommending that we just plain kill the bill and not forward with anything? To the extent to which I'm not sure. Since it's complicated and technical, and I don't practice law in the appeals court, I have to rely on at least some folks here who say it's good, and the council who says we think it's in order.
What it does, as I say, it does take the letter from the appellate lawyers that you've got in the file and addresses that letter, raises some good points. I couldn't tell you myself precisely what language is suggested, but
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Wires.
Have you heard any more from, the Chief Judge had an opportunity to review that letter and respond? He's written us a two-page letter.
Yes, I
which apparently part of what he was concerned about has been addressed in the proposed amendments, but part of it may or may not have having to do with sanctions.
Well, I don't think that Judge Joseph has seen Judge Gillette's letter, and he sent.
I mean Carmack's letter.
Yeah, I don't think that Judge Joseph has seen Carmack's letter. I don't think so.
Shall we wait then? I mean, I'm happy to wait, Mr. Chairman. I just if there's some people that this draft needs to be circulated to, then I think we ought to circulate it to the various judges or panels thereof over there on our left, and let them get back to us if they don't like Eric's language. You know, I guess that we ought to know that before we pass it out. But otherwise, if we're going to sit here and wait on our own knowledge and belief to grow, I'd pass it. I don't think it's worth it from my standpoint.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. I don't have any feelings really one way or the other as to whether it ought to, we ought to go ahead and send it out this way or whether there should be some changes, because I've forgotten what Judge Gillette suggested, although I respect his ability as an appellate lawyer. I'll let the House worry about it.
Let's just wait and let him get back to us then.
All right. If that's all right, we can...
Do circulate it.
That'll get done tomorrow. I'll hand deliver that over to Judge Joseph. Okay. Then let's go to Senate Bill 887.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is to do with the DOE Victim Impact Program, distributing minor amendment to consider. This would allow the court to order the DOE Victim Impact Program in the diversion, as a condition of the diversion program. Right now it's limited to convictions under the driving under the influence law. The minor issue that I brought up at the last hearing was what do you do about indigent defendants and their inability to pay? And in front of the committee is two proposals to deal with that. The committee might also have to specifically insert a dollar figure. The dollar figure mentioned at the hearing by Judge McGillicutt was $5.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the proposed McGillicutt amendment of $5 for starters.
All right. Senator Hamby moves Council's proposed amendment dated 5/28. Is that the one?
No, this is different.
No,
Mr. Chair.
This is just the insertion of 5 on line 8 of the bill. $5 on line 8 of the bill.
Oh, to insert the...
Mm-hmm, B.
All right. Any objection to that motion? All right, that's so ordered then. Now, does that, you think that that addresses the concern of the...
There's still the concern of indigent defense, defendants. And that's Eric's proposals, Proposal A or Proposal B, is that it?
That's correct. Mr. Chair, before we get to my proposed amendments, let me ask the committee, the amendments that were just passed, was that the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 887 that has page 4 in the right-hand corner?
Yes.
Has page 4 in the right-hand corner?
Because it does, it just changes the language just slightly from the printed bill. No substantial change, but it changes it a bit.
Well, I don't have anything that says...
It's just...
It begins with the words, delete lines 8 and 9 of the printed bill and insert. That's the first line of the proposed amendment.
Anybody have that?
No.
I do.
Let me read the amendment. It would delete lines 8 and 9 and insert, reading the whole sentence. If the court requires attendance under this section, the court may require the defendant, as part of the diversion agreement, to pay a reasonable fee to the Victim Impact Program to offset the cost of the defendant's participation. Court shall not order the defendant to pay a fee in excess of $5 under the section. In addition to the $5 insertion, this would have the money go to the program directly rather than become an additional burden from the court administrator's office. I just wanted to clarify that's what the committee passed.
We did that. Oh, you mean just.
That's what I'm asking.
Now, that's what I would like to move, Mr.
Oh,
Chair.
Oh, yes, all right, because we...
It's counsel's...
Whose proposal is this, the page 4 proposal? At the Judicial Department's...
I believe, yeah, that came from Mr. Schwenk's testimony.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, that proposal is attached to the back of Brad Schwenk's testimony.
Okay. We'll call that the Judicial Department's amendment. Well, then Senator Hamby will withdraw the last motion she made, and she moves the proposed amendment to 887, which is marked page four and submitted by the Judicial Department, which would have the effect of deleting lines eight and nine of the printed bill and inserting other language. Any discussion? Any objection? That's so ordered. Now, let me ask this question. Is this, and Mr. Swank's in the audience, is this going to take care of the concern expressed that we're loading up these DUI defendants with all these fees and charges already, and we shouldn't be taking any more big steps to do that? $5 I don't consider to be a big step, but does that address that concern? Now, come on up, anybody.
And I think it also addresses the concern of bookkeeping procedures, mainly that...
For the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm representing the Oregon Judicial Department. The amendments that I gave you address the concern. I didn't read. The amendments that I originally gave you address the concern because if you remember the testimony before your committee from the other people who were concerned with the bill was they would like to get money when they can. And my amendments originally addressed that by saying they may, making it permissive to begin with and saying that it could be an amount of up to $5. They said that they would waive it when they could. I haven't, let's see, the court may waive the fee. They don't pay it. Resources and other costs and fees require a diversion agreement in the nature of the burden the fee would impose. And these amendments, either Proposal A or Proposal B, would make it clear that in cases of indigency they could waive it. So it would, one, be a sliding scale, so they could charge less. I mean, $5 is not a lot, but if they determine it's only $3 and won't affect it, and eliminates the bookkeeping concern and the problem of collecting because they order it as the diversion to be paid to the program rather than paid to the court and then handled and turned over to somebody else.
We don't need either one of those amendments if we adopt this one that you submitted because it's discretionary with the court to order the payment of anything.
Yeah.
So I assume if the defendant's indigent, the court's not going to order the payment of the $5.
Right? That was why I drafted it the way I did.
All right. Any, yes?
Well, I looked at counsel's amendments first before I had seen this, and it just occurs to me that the person that this is applicable to is driving an automobile. He has put gasoline in it, and he has spent enough money to buy booze to get himself in his intoxicated condition. I don't know why we have to. I mean, he may be indigent to the fact that he can't afford an attorney for $1,000 to defend him, but he certainly can afford $5 to help pay for the program.
Yes, go ahead.
If I might, in terms of addressing that, there are already a number of fees that they are required to pay in addition to the cost of attorney that run into several hundred dollars and in terms of other things. One of the concerns that we as a judicial department had was the fact that these fees tend to get added on individually in small chunks.
I read your letter.
Okay. Then I won't.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
sorry. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, if it's the intention of the committee that the court have the ability to waive the fee, is at least my suggestion that the committee be clear about that in the bill. It's somewhat ambiguous. I mean, using the word may is permissive. If the committee really wants, if the committee's intent is to give the court that discretion, at least my suggestion is to say it somehow. In the bill, and the proposal B makes that as clear as it can be.
Well, I don't think it could be any clearer.
With it being permissive.
Yeah. I suppose the only question, one maybe raised by Senator Brockman, whether $5 is enough. Obviously, if the person is indigent, whether it's $5 or $50, the court's not going to order it to be paid. I think that Brad's suggested amendment takes care of the whole situation. Did we adopt your amendment yet?
I think we did adopt your, or this, did we?
Mrs. Schwank's amendment has been adopted.
Yes.
Yes, all right, fine. Well, that's where we are then, and so I think.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill.
Senator Hamby moves.
As amended.
Senate Bill 887, as amended, just amended, to the floor of the House of Representatives. Discussion. Call roll, please.
Aye.
Cohen.
No.
Hamby.
Aye.
Hale.
Aye.
Squires.
Aye.
Fry.
No. That carries. Okay, we're going to adjourn at 5:10, and.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, counsel.
I'm wondering if it would be possible for us to deal with.
And what?
Okay, that's.